The Doctor Is In is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.
Hello, Dr. Ray. I'm sure I'm going to get really good advice from you.
Why do I have to be the insightful professional?
Thank you for empowering me.
Here's what I think is going on.
I think you're a hoot and a half.
My idea, my theory, my guidance is a bit of a stretch.
I just love your show.
Does that comfort you?
No.
Am I close?
No.
You are really smart.
I am sensitive and understanding and nurturing.
Your show to me is like a comedy information show.
Did I make you feel a lot better or what?
No, you made me feel worse.
Now, from the studios of Living Bread Radio Network in Canton, Ohio, the hometown of Mother Angelica, here's Dr. Ray.
Expanding your super ego while shrinking your id. Those of you who had Psych 101 recognize that as Freudian terminology. I personally am fixated in the oral stage. You know, Freud said that. He said if you didn't resolve these youthful conflicts, they would reverberate into your adulthood. And then, if, for example, I didn't resolve my oral conflicts, which are really in the first year of life or so, then you become an adult who is fixated. And, of course, I just talk on the radio. That's oral. And I talk in therapy. That's oral. And I got a bunch of kids, so I talk at the kids. That's oral. I'm definitely fixated. Good to have you with me. This is the Monday version of The Doctor Is In. E-person Monday. E-person, not email. Eliminating 50% of the population by saying email. I could say email, e-female. I thought about that, but I just wanted the generic. Keeping it inclusive. Where I take your e-persons as they come in. Now, most of them can be answered in a sentence or two because they're asking for some referral to a psychologist or a therapist in an area, and there are several websites you can check on that. Or they might ask about a book, or they might make a comment, or they might disagree with me about something. And some of them are situations. Now, I was looking at one just before I came on the program here. The situation is extremely protracted, and the email itself would take a lot of editing to get it down to a readable part of this program. So sometimes that eliminates the emails too, but we shall get to them. One of the common objections thrown at parents who do not like the pace of the way the culture is socializing and immoralizing our children. It is chomping away at childhood. Less and less and less years of innocence are being left and allowed to our children. It's horrific. So when a parent tries to eliminate some of those forces, and they're everywhere, by the way, they're like the fog that just seeps into your house. When a parent tries to eliminate those, they often hear, you can't protect them forever. That's a real world out there. What are you going to do? Going to wrap some kind of moral, emotional bubble around them? Then when they finally get out there, they're going to get shell-shocked. They're not going to know how to cope with it. You got to let them deal with life. They're going to face it. Yes, they are going to face it. Yes, that is a real world out there. Yes, they do have to learn to deal with life. When? Who is better able to cope with bad stuff that comes their way, either through another kid, a TV, a computer? Who is better able, a 7-year-old or a 12-year-old? You can't protect them forever. Well, first of all, you're not attempting to protect them forever. You're attempting to protect them and give them a few more years of childhood. How is the objection, you can't protect them forever, even remotely applicable here. If somebody would have said to my grandfather, where my dad was concerned, you know, Angelo, you got to perfect them forever. My grandfather would have looked at him and thought, what are you talking about? I'm going to protect him as long as I can. I'm his father. You got to let him see your real life. Yeah. Not as a kid. You want to let him have a childhood, and a bit of an innocence. I remember one time my mom said to me, when she was dating my father, if she would hear an off-color joke, she didn't understand it. Half the time, she didn't get it. Is that bad? Should my mother at age 20 have been, oh, yeah, she's pretty much familiar with pretty much every piece of moral sewage you could come up with. Is that what would have been good? The average 10-year-old today is more worldly exposed than the average 14 or 15-year-old of three generations ago. Maybe more so. My son, when he went to college, his first year, he said, hey, Dad, I got an assignment in our writing class, and we had to pick from five topics. And the topics, I think, were all morality topics. My son chose one, and he was going to take the more traditional religious stance on this topic. I said, Andrew, go ahead. He said, well, you know, having listened to my prof, I kind of know where he's coming from with this. And I said, well, you want to write it that way? He goes, yeah, I do. Go ahead, Andrew. You get a bad grade, I'm behind you. Now, if Andrew were a freshman in high school as opposed to a freshman in college, I don't think he could have written as logical or compelling a paper. He didn't have the wherewithal. He didn't have the understanding that he had at age 19. The next time somebody says to you, you can't protect them forever, you say to them, I'm not trying to protect them forever. I'm just trying to give them a few more years of childhood that the culture seems to want to take away. Or you can say, I have no intention of protecting them forever, but I am going to protect them as long as I can. Or you can say, I'm protecting them until they're old enough to make the good decisions on their own. It is absurd to bully parents with that one. It was always understood that one of the prime duties of a parent was to protect. That's what you did. Physically, morally, emotionally, you protected. Good dads, very protective. And now it's been turned into some kind of psychological deficiency? When somebody gives you that one, just stare at them. If you don't want to say anything, just stare at them. You don't have to defend yourself. Just know that what you're doing is a lot better way to do it than the culture all around you is saying to do it. All right, when we come back, we'll see what we got in the stack on the phone as we blend them together. I'm Dr. Ray. Thanks for being with me. You said you're a super fan of the show. Did I just drop you down to a medium fan of the show?
I think so.
Aw, gee.
The not-for-profit Catholic Family Conference, Saturday, May 1st, is a vibrant event that will inspire, encourage, and fortify your family life with the truths of the faith. This year's stellar lineup of speakers includes Cardinal George Pell, Bishop Joseph Strickland, Dr. Ralph Martin, and Steve Ray. If you can't be in Irving, Texas, attend online by purchasing the Virtual Family Pass, which includes all masses and speaker sessions. It's the Catholic Family Conference, Saturday, May 1st, where the heart of society begins and ends with family.
Bishop Robert Barron on the priesthood.
You as a parent apply Galatians 5. Is watch your kids as they move into the religious space, if you want to put it that way. I made noises about the priesthood on and off when I was a little kid. My parents were never oppressive about it. They never pressed me in that direction. But they would quietly indicate an openness to that, or like, that's a good thing. I remember I still have it upstairs, a Bible that my parents got me for Christmas in 1969. I'm a little kid. And it's, from Mom and Dad to Bob, Christmas 1969. They knew, they sensed I was kind of interested in religious things. So I would say that, don't be pushy, of course, but don't go the other direction. My generation got too much of that, was, back off. Who am I to tell you what to do? You make up your mind. No, I think gently, quietly affirming that, yeah, that's a good thing you're thinking about. And you should be open to that.
EWTN. Live truth. Live Catholic.
Do you own popular index mutual funds or ETFs? If so, you're automatically owned shares of companies that conflict with your moral beliefs. Ave Maria mutual funds are managed to conform to pro-life and pro-family values. Long-term investors can invest in the no-load Ave Maria mutual funds. The experienced professional portfolio managers make decisions based on investment fundamentals and pro-life values. You can learn more about Ave Maria mutual funds today at 866-AVE-MARIA or visit AveMariaFunds.com.
You know, we burn words. We really do. We take good words and use them up. Words like awesome, wonderful, perfect. We throw them around like they're candy. Oh, it was awesome. Really? It inspired awe? We use the word amazing to describe a sandwich. What will we have when our first child is born? How will you describe the first child? You've already used up amazing on a sandwich. So if you say that it was amazing holding your newborn child, basically equivalent to a sandwich. I hope it's a good sandwich. That is true. Hyperbolic language. All right, this is a short email. I don't have a whole lot of details to it, and I wouldn't normally take something this short, but it says here, my family looks well-functioning on the outside. My parents are married, my siblings and I are all grown up and employed. Let me stop there. There's a big difference between civilized functioning and virtuous functioning. I think it's safe to say that the bulk of the culture is still functioning in a civilized way. They may have no real religious sense, or whatever religious sense they have is give me $3 worth of God. But overall, they don't get in trouble with the law. Perhaps they're married. Marriage ain't the greatest. It's not the most giving marriage, but they're still together. And they go to work every day, and they're raising their kids. So for the most part, they're functioning civilly. But to function above that, to seek to function with virtue and morality and charity, well, then I think you really got to have a good, strong connection to Jesus or God. From the inside, my family is very cold, stiff, and lacking in affection or closeness. Apparently, this is what the writer is feeling. referring to my family, is that his grown siblings? Is that mom and dad? And what's the history here? If this is a history of, this is their wiring, this is their temperament, this is their dynamic, this is the way they've functioned as long as I've known them, far back as I can remember, then this is entrenched. It's something that's not going to move, which makes the next question a little tougher. How can I address or improve this? Let's take the address question first. Let me go to those adjectives. Cold, stiff, lacking in affection or closeness. I think there's a law of giving somebody feedback. The more you address something that you see as needing correction, needing commented upon, the more you address that in terms of a personality trait, cold, stiff, aggressive, mean-spirited, snarky, whatever the broad trait is, it is far less likely that the person will hear you. Negative personality traits, when you bring those up to someone, you know, you're very thoughtless. You're kind of an arrogant guy, aren't you? You're self-centered. You got a lot of self-centeredness in you. Those words immediately breed defensiveness in most people who are in fact that way. Now, if you're not that way, then it comes as a shock to you, maybe. But if you are that way, you don't recognize that you're that way. In general, you don't. So when somebody brings it up, you get defensive. What? What are you talking about? Self-centered. Because that's a very, very broad description. Self-centered across what situations? With whom? How often? To what degree? How intense? So the first thing I would say to our writer here is, if you're going to address it, which I would advise you against, but if you choose to address it, be very, very careful about addressing it with those kinds of personality traits. Because if that is the history of your family, which I believe it is, reading between the lines of your e-person, then you ain't going to get anywhere. All you'll do is arouse resistance, justification, return criticism, whatever. I don't think you'll get anywhere. Now you said, how can I improve this? I don't know if you can, but if you're at all going to improve it, it's going to probably come from you acting differently than they do. For example, one of my children acknowledges that she's not very affectionate. She doesn't particularly naturally hug and kiss. I am Italian. We hug and kiss with every other word. So what do? I hug and kiss her anyway. And as I've noticed over the years, she's gotten warmer. She's gotten more comfortable with a hug, with a kiss, with an I love you. That wasn't necessarily her bent. But because her mother and I do that, she softened toward it. I would say if your family is cold or stiff or lacking in affection, whatever you can do to be that way, probably I'd say over the next short period of time, 35, 40 years, whatever you can do, at least you will be different. You will be warmer. You will give more compliments. You will be more attentive. when you talk to them. You'll be more involved in what matters to them and in their lives, and you'll kiss them goodbye when you leave, whatever it is. Now, the complicating factor here is, if they don't want it, if they're resistant to it, and if you pick up the vibes, cut it out. Okay, then cut it out. And accept the reality that you have a family who isn't anywhere near as easily warm and affectionate as you would like them to be. On the other hand, if you notice a very slow melting of their cold, cold style, keep going. Keep going. That's how you improve it. I wouldn't advise you to, quote unquote, address it. That's like saying, let me tell you what's wrong with you people. Because you see, they may not see anything wrong with us people. And they may look at you like, well, who are you to tell us this? As I've gotten older, I have gotten more reluctant. Now, this may be good or bad. I'm not really sure. I haven't decided yet. Hope you'll have an answer in 20 or 25 years. I've decided to do a lot less of what one might call corrective criticism. I think I have learned that, unfortunately, most people don't take corrective criticism well. It's like my wife used to joke. Somebody would say to her, well, what gifts of the Spirit do you have? And she said, I think I got the gift of admonishment. I'm slow to offer it. And if I offer it, I usually try to be as specific as I can. I'll maybe point out one particular behavior that happened or a comment made, as opposed to generalizing into, you're opinionated. You really think your opinion's more important than anybody else's. Ooh, that kind of stuff. You try that once. Now, here's the irony. Our writer is saying that this is the way my family is. It's who they are. However they got that way, whether they are wired that way, or the dynamic just took place over years and years and years and years, and this is now how they function, I don't know. And he doesn't want to be that way. But the irony is, they probably see absolutely nothing problematic or morally wrong with the way they are. And for their son, our letter writer here, to imply, you need to look at this. You need to assess yourself. You need to decide if this is a good way to be, because you look fine on the outside, but on the inside, you got a lot of stuff that needs, how shall we say, massaged. Writer, my guess would be that's not going to get you anywhere. So, to conclude, if you're going to address it, ooh, you just tippy-toe. Watch the personality traits. Those are some fighting words. Accuse them of being cold or stiff or unaffectionate. And the most part, you just be who you are, because it appears you'd like to be different, or you are different. Okay? That's you. Them is them, and you is you. I'm trained to be articulate. So you be who you are, and that's probably the best way to get things moving a little softer. All right. E-Person Monday. Got a break coming up here in about 2 seconds. I'm going to hear that music start to play. There it is. My clock is on. Good to have you with me. I'm Dr. Ray Guarini. Program Doctor is in Monday through Friday, 1 o'clock Eastern Time. TV show Living Right with Dr. Ray, soon to be airing its 10th season. And we got some opening bits that I think are among the funniest we've ever done. I love to do those opening bits. That's what I call them. Very creative, huh? Opening bits.
EDWTN Radio for the reason that Mother Angelica founded this entire enterprise. She always saw this as a spiritual growth network. It was to be an enterprise in media that reached people in all aspects of their life. She saw this as a holistic approach to reaching the whole person in the middle of the world and bringing them truth and life.
Raymond Arroyo thinks Catholic radio is important. So should you.
Remember the song, "You Gotta Have Hope? All You Really Need Is Hope?" Well, it's not all you need, but it is one of the three theological virtues. The Catholic Catechism tells us that hope helps us desire heaven and eternal life as our happiness. We trust in Jesus' promise while relying not just on our own strengths, but with the assistance extended by grace from the Holy Spirit. Hope keeps discouragement at bay and sustains us in times of abandonment. It preserves us from selfishness by leading us to the happiness that flows from charity. Christian hope unfolds from Jesus' preaching of the Beatitudes, which raises our hope to heaven as the new promised land. The Catechism says hope is expressed and nourished in prayer, especially the Our Father, the summary of everything that hope leads us to desire. This is Peggy Stanton, and this has been the Order of Malta's Minute with the Catechism.
How can we have faith and be transformed by the gospel? What part can we play in recreating the world for God's good plan? Once we understand that the gospel is not merely good news, but explosive, life-changing news, our life will never be the same. In Father John Ricardo's new book, Rescued, The Unexpected and Extraordinary News of the Gospel, he helps us to see the world through the lenses of God, with a clear vision of the plot and the outcome of the story that we're living through. You can get Rescued and Father John's other great books on the store page at AveMariaRadio.net.
Well, it's getting pretty warm out, and I was golfing. Now, I'm not the greatest golfer. I went out in the morning. I was on the first hole of the golf course, beginning my routine. This voice comes over the clubhouse speaker. "Would the man on the woman's tee back up to the men's tee, please?" Now, there was some people behind me. I could see them staring at me. But I was already, you know, getting ready. I was into my routine. I just didn't want to hear that. So I'm addressing the ball. And then I heard the announcement again. "Would the man on the woman's tee back up to the men's tee?" All right, just trying to ignore the fella. Keep on concentrating. Once more, he said the same thing, and then he said, "Please." I stopped, turned around, looked back at the clubhouse, and I yelled, "Would the person in the clubhouse kindly be quiet and let me play my second shot?" So you could tell, not exactly the best golfer in the world. I have a son who is 33 years of age. I haven't had to discipline him too often. I would hope not. He's 33. Okay. Though ever since he was in high school, every now and then he shows an attitude. Now, okay, I got to define attitude. When people use attitude, it's always negative. Nobody ever describes an attitude that is pleasant. "You know, she's just got an attitude." How's that? "Oh, she's always so sweet and complimentary and gentle-spirited and soft-hearted. What an attitude." Not too often. When somebody says attitude, they mean snotty, snippy, snarty, snooky. Snotty, snippy, snarky, snooty. That's better. Every now and then, since high school, he shows an attitude. Well, question I would have is, does he live at home? Which I'm assuming he doesn't. Of course, nowadays, who knows? I want to handle it reasonably, but I usually just get defensive. Okay, see, this goes with what I said on the previous e-person not more than a few minutes ago. If his attitude is surrounding, not only a tinged remark, but a tinged remark that sort of attacks mom's personality. You know, when somebody shows you an attitude, oftentimes they are getting personal with their accusations. And they're saying these broad umbrella encompassing traits that you have that they want to comment on. Now, if he's doing that, I understand, Mom, you're going to get defensive here. What is the best way to handle an adult son? Oh, wait a minute. She's not talking to me, son. An adult son. It's not adult, comma, son. Who has an attitude? Well, I guess it depends. If this is an adult talking to you that way, many therapists, especially those who are of a more assertive bent, would say, I don't appreciate being talked to that way. I think that's incredibly disrespectful. I would like that you would talk a little more reasonable to me. Now, that's what they tell you to say. And here's the problem with it. He already knows that. He's not going to think to himself, I had no idea that my mom would be offended when I got snotty with her. Whoa! Boy, I'm glad she pointed that out to me. Okay, so that's the one thing about saying, I really don't like it when you do that. Maybe that reinforces you don't like it when you do it because you said it again, but by and large, this is not a revelation to him. So I don't usually lean in that direction. I like just staring at him. Like, what was that all about? What is your reason for talking like that? A perplexed kind of, I don't want to say oblivious stare, but a perplexed, I don't get you stare. You could do that. I like that. Or you could come out and say, why are you talking like that? What did I do to deserve that remark? That tone of voice. Now, you can do that because you're focusing on the motive for his attitude. You're not telling him you don't like it because he knows you don't like it, obviously. But you're focusing on what provoked that attitude, which leads us to this next part of her e-person. There have been times that I have done something, and then Mom puts indirectly. Now, I don't quite know what she means by that, indirectly. I think maybe she means I didn't mean to. That hurt his feelings. How could I talk to him about those instances? Excuse me. Well, let me sip my, my Coke here. You ask him, especially taking the opportunity to ask him when he gets attitudinal with you. Is it something I've done? What have I done? Is there anything I've done to breed this? You could do that. Now, I've found again that most people will not be blunt with you about that. Oh, just forget it. Nah, it was nothing. Wasn't anything. No big deal. No big deal. And you're required to probe a little further to hear it. But I'd still say, I don't know, rough guess, 50.2693% of people will just play it off. They don't want to approach it for lots of reasons. Sometimes it makes them feel petty and small. Other times they're afraid they misinterpreted it. Other times they think they're going to get into an argument with you. Other times you're going to defend yourself and justify yourself and they don't want to hear it. Whatever the reason. But you can ask. You can say it. But here's the bad news. The guy's 33. And if in fact there's been no slow decline in his attitude toward his mother periodically, then apparently when the emotion hits him or when you supposedly do something that he doesn't appreciate or like, or thinks you have the right to do, then he's probably going to show an attitude. And that, unfortunately, is him at age 33. Now, I would hope that as he gets older, he starts to outgrow it. Morally outgrow it, maybe? I don't know. I don't know what his relationship is with God, but that's really, I found, one of the few things that really make people start to try to treat other people better on a day-to-day personal basis, is that they see that kind of snottiness is wrong. If you don't really have a virtue drive to do that, then by and large, you probably just go with the emotion of the moment.
Father Benedict Groeschel.
There are legitimate differences of opinion in any religion. There are differences of opinion in Catholicism. But in Catholicism, you expect that people will take the teaching of its supreme authority seriously. To go diametrically opposed to those teachings is to not be a Catholic. Someone in the name of Catholicism is sponsoring the destruction of human life, lives of unborn children. And they got the name Catholic on the door. The highest authority in Catholicism in the encyclical Humanae Vitae, Evangelium Vitae, is absolutely clear that no Catholic can support abortion and that Catholics are responsible to take serious action against legalized abortion.
EWTN. Live truth. Live Catholic.
Christ is the answer, with Father John Ricardo.
John, chapter 8, verse 51. Jesus is in a discussion with some of the leaders of the Jews. They're talking about Abraham. Abraham lived 1,500 years before the time of Jesus. So in the course of the discussion, Jesus says, "Truly, truly, I say to you, if anyone keeps my word, he will never see death." He says that often in the Gospels. "He who keeps my word or believes in me will never die." To which the Jews say, "Now we know you have a demon." And they say, "Abraham died, as did the prophets, all the patriarchs, the great men and women of the history of Israel. All these people died, and you say, if anyone keeps my word, he will never taste death? Are you greater than our father Abraham, who died? And the prophets, who died?" And Jesus says, "Your father Abraham rejoiced that he was to see my day. He saw it and was glad." To which the Jews say, "You are not yet 50 years old, and you've seen Abraham?" And Jesus answers, "Truly, truly, I say to you, before Abraham was, I am."
Into that story. I'm Dr. Ray Guarendi. Program here is Doctors In, Monday through Friday, 1 o'clock Eastern Time. It's E-Person Monday, where we take a chance on addressing. I used to say tackling the emails, but that seems rough, doesn't it? Tackling. Addressing, I think, is nice. It's kind of, that connotes sort of a gentle sitting at the table, putting labels on envelopes, sort of a softer kind of approach. You're e-persons, but before I do that, I was at a conference a few years back when we were allowed to have conferences, and there was a fellow there who was a former professional golfer, and he had a claim to fame. They called him the $1 million man because he had won a tournament that so far below par that he won $1 million. I think the last hole he had something like a 5 or 6 foot putt. If he made it, $1 million. Can you imagine that? Putting for $1 million? So he had given the talk to a Catholic men's conference, and he was on before me, and he got done. We were chatting in the back, and I said, let's just say his name was John. "John, can I ask you a question about golf?" Now, I watched his face, because typically you got to know that these guys that are good at this, a fair amount of the time, people come up to him and want free golf advice. And I saw his face, and I was waiting for, and he was very charitable about it. He said, yeah, sure, Ray, it's okay. And just the fact that he was stumbling around, I knew that it was like, okay, Ray, come on, get it over with. I said, John, one of the problems I have with my swing is that I really don't time it well for the ball to go through right when the dinosaur's mouth is open. And he broke up. Now, it wasn't that funny, but I think part of his laughing was the fact that he was all braced for having to sit there and go through a six-minute interchange on how I should correct my swing. And when I just threw the dinosaur mouth at him, he lost it. And then he said, well, you hit it when the mouth is closed, so by the time the ball gets there, it's open. I said, see, that's why you're the professional. What do we got here? Let me see what we got here. I have a coworker, Dr. A, who is suffering from anxiety, reflection, remorse. Now, see, those are three different reactions. Anxiety, reflection, remorse. Best I can figure out, I don't know what the anxiety is about. Okay, anxiety generally is for the future. So I'm not sure how that's directed. Reflection means he's thinking about what he did, whether he should have done it. And then remorse kind of implies he has second thoughts that he shouldn't have done it after a surgical operation. Ah, okay. He is dealing with pain and problems since the surgery. If I were a betting man, I'd say that was probably a back surgery, because a lot of surgeons will tell you back surgery sometimes isn't real effective, and sometimes it results in more problems than prior to surgery. So he's not only dealing with the pain, but he's dealing with, should I have done this? Did this actually help? Was it worth it? Now, I don't know where the anxiety is coming from. He's been on a drug to help with OCD, obsessive compulsive disorder. Now, OCD is related to anxiety. The two are often a package deal. The way that manifests itself is that if you don't follow through, for example, with a particular compulsion, if you try to resist it, you get anxious. Or if you're obsessing, ruminating about something, and it just keeps twirling in your head, you get anxious about what it means. If, for example, you don't do it. I listen and try to counsel him as he rehashes his reflections. How much are you caught in that counseling role? See, if he just wants to complain about what he did, his regrets about it, and this has happened a number of times, my suspicion is you're going to get tired of this. It's not a matter of your failing in your Christian duty. It's a matter of your sizing up the situation and realizing that this person is not intent on trying to work it through, on trying to get better, on trying to have more peace about it. He just wants to gripe about it. Don't we know situations like that? He rehashes his reflections, his anxiety, and his disappointment over his post-operation issues. All right, whatever happened as a result of the surgery has made it, in his mind, worse. And he can't get that out of his mind. His ruminations are probably about, why did I do that? Now how long am I going to deal with this? Am I stuck? What's going to happen to me? What about my future functioning? Okay. My heart is telling him. Now, does that mean you haven't said this? Or are you saying my best sense is to tell him he is a non-practicing Lutheran? Okay. So at this point, the idea of any kind of suffering as offering up or being redemptive or anything that would have any good attached to it, in his mind, is about as far away as you can get. My heart is telling him to turn to prayer and reflection with Jesus Christ. Mike, how foreign is that to him? He looking at you like you got three heads? Is he looking at you like I don't get this, what you're telling me to do here? That might be good for you, Mike. It's not so good for me. I want to know how to deal with this. As long as the pain is still there, I would suspect that he's going to ruminate about it. I would suspect that he is going to, over and over and over and over, ponder the regrets that he had because the surgery didn't work out. Perhaps his expectations were that this was going to cure it all. And it's a long fall from cure it all to cure it not at all. What else does Mike say? Any advice? Yeah. At some point, and I've said this to people who I feel just want to go on and on a woe is me kind of thing. I've gotten to the point where I said, I don't know what to tell you. I don't know what more to tell you. I'm not sure this is going to go away until you decide, or until you decide to think it through in a different way. I don't know what to tell you. And they look at me like, what? A shrink who doesn't know what to tell me? Oh, I know what to tell you. I told you a whole bunch of stuff. You didn't like anything I told you. You know the country song? Country songs have a lot of philosophical wisdom. You can feel bad if it makes you feel better. Don't you know people like that? That they're just wanting to complain and be a woe is me and life stinks and I'm a victim and nothing you can do. You think that, okay, I'm going to give them some advice to help them not be this way as much, thinking, rather maybe naively, that good, they welcome that advice because they don't want to feel bad. Unfortunately, sometimes they just don't want to feel any different. They don't want to think any different. And at some point, Mike, you're going to have to decide, I pretty much poured all the effort I want to pour into this. This is now just a matter of he wants to complain and regret and what if about this. And I don't have much more to offer him. All righty. Dr. Ray, thank you for joining me.
Do you own popular index mutual funds or ETFs? If so, you're automatically owned shares of companies that conflict with your moral beliefs. Ave Maria mutual funds are managed to conform to pro-life and pro-family values. Long-term investors can invest in the no-load Ave Maria mutual funds. The experienced professional portfolio managers make decisions based on investment fundamentals and pro-life values. You can learn more about Ave Maria Mutual Funds today at 866-AVE-MARIA or visit AveMariaFunds.com.
We are in conflict with the surrounding culture. What's happened? Well, one thing that's happened is the collapse of Christendom. We can no longer count on the society surrounding us to reinforce or hold up or give sanction to some of those basic rules by which we live.
Richard John Neuhouse, before he became Father Richard John Neuhouse, in his book Naked Public Square, he pointed out that every major social reform in American history was always argued about and fought over in terms of God, Scripture, the Church. And so the Church and religion were the carriers of social reform. We may be at a place where that's no longer the case, given the redefinition of marriage and given the non-religious, anti-religious affiliation of leading homosexual activists.
Cresta in the Afternoon with Al Cresta, 4 Eastern on EWTN Radio.
Solidarity HealthShare began out of the Christian tradition of neighbor helping neighbor. They're a nonprofit medical cost-sharing ministry in which their members share in each other's eligible medical expenses. Solidarity HealthShare is not insurance, but rather an alternative way to pay for medical costs that adheres to the teachings of the Catholic Church. They'll never share in a medical care that goes against their values and morals, such as abortion, contraception, and sterilization. More information available at SolidarityHealthShare.org or at 844-313-4999.
Dr. Igarendi, thanks for joining me. Doctor is in Monday through Friday, 1 o'clock Eastern Time. Various time zones. Mountain time is 11. Pacific time's 10. All the way out in the Marianas Trench, which is the deepest measured point in the oceans, about 7 miles down. I think we're on the other side of the international dateline, so if I say something dumb, I've already said it, and I'm just repeating it. Because that was... It goes backwards, right? It was yesterday. I think I can get to part of this. There's two parts on this e-person. I just heard you speaking about a 16-year-old son who is dating an 18-year-old woman in Nancy's neighborhood. Yeah, Nancy was a mom divorced from her husband. And when the boy comes to visit her, and the only reason he comes to visit her is to go over to the house of this 18-year-old. Reminded me about my stepson's situation. In 1994, I married a widower whose wife died tragically at the age of 40, 5 years prior, leaving her 3 children from a previous marriage and their own 11-year-old son. Shortly thereafter, we were married. My stepson, then 16, started seeing a 21-year-old woman. He quit school, moved in with her, married her, even though he felt in his heart the relationship wasn't working out. Eventually, they were divorced. No children. She cheated on him constantly. If you have a way to reach Nancy, help her to stand firm with your advice that seeing the older woman can set him up for some major heartbreak. Well, unfortunately, we do not have ways, and we'll get this kind of email periodically that'll say, if you can reach this person, please tell them about this book, or please tell them about this particular program or this particular self-help group. We can't. We don't have the calls kept, traced, whatever. Now, that said, my question was, at age 16, he started seeing a 21-year-old. Where were mom and dad on this? Were they on the same page? Did dad say, now, I'm going to go into some speculation here. I've seen parents who feel guilty after a spouse passes. They feel that the death of a mother or a father was such a tragic blow to a child or children that they don't want to frustrate them any more than they have to, which often means sacrificing their discipline and their standards and their expectations. Like the analogy I've used, you know, he's lost a mom, therefore I can't ask him to dry the dishes too. So at the time, my question is, why is a 16-year-old freely, which is what it sounds like, seeing a 21-year-old. Now, given what the writer has said, which is, I don't think that wasn't going to work out, my thought would be she was the one who didn't want this to happen, and dad somehow permitted it or overruled her. I could be wrong. Could be that just both of them said, we wish you wouldn't do that, but if you're going to, we can't stop you. Which they could, by the way. So, she's saying, Dr. Ray, help Nancy to stand firm with your advice that seeing an older woman can set him up for some major heartbreak. And I don't know if it's necessarily just the age. I would wonder about a 21-year-old of any age, really. Boy or girl at 21, man or woman, seeing a 16-year-old, which really raises a question. I mean, it can work, but it's less common than not. So I thank you for joining me here on The Doctor Is In, on the See Person Monday. Good Lord permitting. See you tomorrow. We can talk face-to-face. No, we really can't. We can talk ear-to-ear on The Doctor Is In. Thank you so much for joining me. Walk with God always.
For information on Dr. Ray's presentations, books, and CDs, visit DRA.com and follow him on Facebook. The Doctor Is In is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.